The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but
we
because they are hard.
We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents. Consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome to the Space Show for Tuesday evening. I am your host, David Livingston, and we thank you for listening in tonight. And I promise you, you're going to feel like you've been strapped onto a Kai Michelson rocket by the end of our show tonight. You're going to have a lot of fun, and you're going to learn a lot, too. So let me rush through our announcements so I can formally introduce our guest to you, and we can get started. For those of you that want to call, when we start accepting calls in a few minutes, the toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. No call screeners. Be patient. Let the phone ring, and we'll bring you up on air as quickly as we can. The guy who's calling right now, I'm not going to answer the phone. I haven't even started the show yet, and you're calling. What the hell's wrong with you? So you don't even know who the guest is and what we're going to talk about, and you're already calling the show? Come on, be patient. 1-866-687-7223, and we'll be happy to answer your phone in a few minutes. And if you want to use email tonight, it is drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And remember that if you do use email, keep it short and to the point. It's much easier to read short emails on air than really long ones. And then our website is thespaceshow.com, and please check it out. We have a website newsletter there. We have upcoming shows. That's a new feature on our new website. And as I keep saying, when you see upcoming shows on the right menu bar, then you can start posting comments about that show or asking questions about it. And then during the show, if you use it to post comments about the live show in progress, I'll get copies of those comments and we'll be able to read them on the air to our guests. And then, of course, once the show is archived, that is our blog for the show. So hope you like that new feature. Everything we do is archived, and you can listen right off of our website or easily download the program. There is a menu bar up at the top and links to other important websites and other issues. Links to Amazon. Remember, as a nonprofit, Amazon will support us if you do your Amazon shopping through one of two ways, which are all explained on our website. And we are a 501c3 with onegiantleapfoundation.org. And we exist because many of you do financially support us, and we thank you very much for that support. And so do remember, if you're a U.S. federal taxpayer, and who could forget that with the 15th right around the corner, you do get a tax deduction for your gift to the Space Show. And then for those of you who are fortunate enough to pay California taxes, you get a California tax deduction as well. We are a California public benefit corporation. Remember that we're copyrighted and trademarked, and you can download our programs and circulate them and share them. We encourage you to do so. Or you can send the URLs to people and let them download the shows. There's a couple of rules about this. One is we are copyrighted and trademarked, so don't do anything commercial with our programs. Don't edit, cut, or clip the shows. Don't put them up on YouTube or any other website, your edits or anything like that. And then written transcripts are not permitted, even if they're for your own personal use. And our full copyright statement is at the bottom of every spaceshow.com website page and onegiantleapfoundation.org page. I urge you to become familiar with our copyright rules and statements. And if you have any questions or you're just dying to edit something out of a show and use it for some reason, email me and ask me and get permission if you can do it. And if we can work it out, I'll work it out with you. But always ask. That's the cardinal rule. Podcasting is with Gigadial, and we do thank Andrew for that service. The RSS URL is on our website, and both of our newsletters, our website newsletter and our very short email newsletter, which you can subscribe to by sending us your email address. It goes out at 6 a.m. Monday morning California time, and it is very, very short, guaranteed won't clutter up your email box. We have new sponsors with our website, so the first half of our show tonight is brought to you by Celestis, and they're the premier space memorial service, really an extremely great service. I've used them for my mother and my two dogs, and they're about the best business I've ever dealt with in my life, and I'm not exaggerating on that. But they have a Celestis Foundation. And each of the Celestis 14 Memorial spaceflight missions since 1997 have not only fulfilled the final wishes of their participants, but also assisted exceptional individuals and organizations who are pursuing the goals of space exploration and development, planetary protection, and education of our youth. Contributions are made on behalf of the Celestis Foundation from a portion of the proceeds from each Memorial spaceflight. Some past recipients include the XPRIZE Foundation during the first year of its existence, the Deke Slayton Museum, a student who attended space camp, Los Angeles' Wildlife Way Station for rescued animals, the Frank Redd Small Satellite Scholarship Fund at Utah State University, and the Houston Urban Debate League and the Zia Native American Tribe of New Mexico. Your choice of Celestis Memorial spaceflight for yourself or a loved one or a good friend continue beyond the mission itself. It will assist all of us to build a better world. And the AIAA is also a sponsor, another absolutely terrific organization that I would urge all of you to become a member of. The American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics is the world's largest aerospace professional society. And we're really happy to have them bringing our show to you tonight. AIAA's 30,000 individual members from 88 countries and 95 corporate members are busy shaping the future of aerospace every day, advancing the state of aerospace science and technology, increasing our knowledge of the universe, and bringing the world closer together. You can join them, and you can get lots more information by going to their website, AIAA.org. And that brings me to introducing our guest tonight. So Kai Michelson is back with us, and his bio is on the website, and I urge you to read it because it would take me the full first segment to read it to you and tell you all about his incredible accomplishments. But let's do this. He's known as Rocket Man. He built and launched the first amateur rocket to space May 18th, 2004, and that is the subject of our first space show program together. And if you haven't gone back in the archives and listened to that program, I mean, not only is it hilarious with the stories that Kai told about all of that, but, you know, putting an amateur rocket into space is quite an accomplishment. And I would just urge you to go listen to that show, and you won't forget it, I promise you. But read his full bio, because Rocket Man is one cool dude. He's a stuntman. He's been in over 100 movies, probably household words to most of you. Just read his bio and then sit back and really enjoy tonight's space show program. And he has a project on Indiegogo called Rocket Man, a documentary, and he's going to tell us about that, but much more. But I also want to tell you that Kai is dyslexic. And he is upfront about that, and he has done these accomplishments in this engineering and the rocket-powered motorcycles and all that he has done over the years as a dyslexic. I mean, how cool is that, that he has accomplished so many incredible things with odds like that? And Kai's going to talk to us more about that. Kai, I'm going to quit praising you and just go let you do that yourself. How are you doing, and welcome back to the space show.
Well, good evening, David, and thanks for having me back on.
A real pleasure, and too much time has gone by since we've talked. We're going to have to correct that in future months and future years. What are you doing now? What's been going on since 3 or 4 years ago when we last talked?
Well, actually, in 2014, the CSX team and GoFast went back out to the desert again, and we celebrated our 10th anniversary launch, and we launched another rocket into space, and we upped the miles per hour and the altitude a little bit. But the coolest thing is that we were able to capture a number of pictures from outer space of the Earth, which, you know, that makes us the first, amateurs to ever take a picture of Earth from outer space. So I'm pretty proud of that. You can go onto YouTube and you'll probably go under Kai Michelson on YouTube, and you'll see that footage from that. It's some really incredible footage.
So Kai Michelson, and just search for that on YouTube, and we'll get it.
Yes.
Okay. And I hope everyone will do that, and I'll put a direct link on that for the archives when I archive this show. What else have you been doing? Have you been back in any movies doing stunt work, or that part is over?
Well, actually, you know, everybody has heard of Evel Knievel.
Right, of course, from Montana.
And, and everybody's pretty much aware that he was not successful in the jump over the Snake River. And I've teamed up with a number of the people in the past. Scott Truex is one of them. And some of the original people involved in jumping over that canyon. And we have three actual, almost identical rocket cycles that Evel had, and they're kind of backup stuff, testing type stuff. But we have everything in place. We're all ready to go. The ramp's up. The bleachers are in. We got permits in place, and we're working on a network deal right now to do it. And
so are you the one who's going to do the jumping?
I ain't no dummy. as a matter of fact, a gentleman by the name of Eddie Braun, who's more than qualified to do that. He's a stuntman, West Coast stuntman. He's worked in over 1,000 movies and projects like that. But we're going to do it. We're going to pull this thing off. And I figure, you know, it's quite an accomplishment to launch a rocket into space. But to go back there and do something that Evel couldn't do, I think that's going to be a pretty good feather in this guy's hat when we pull that one off.
What's the drop if you don't make it?
The drop, he's going to be up about 1,500 feet up. It's not good. Let's put it that way.
Does he wear a parachute?
No. Actually, we've worked on, the failure on that was the parachute. And so we've really looked at that. And this thing's going to be going 400 miles an hour in 5 seconds. That's quite a boost. And it's a steam rocket.
Uh-huh.
Name exactly like Evel Knievel used, except in the parachute department we have three parachutes in there actually. We have a drogue that we're going to open up at high speed to slow it down and brush off some of the speed, and then we deployed the large chute, the main chute, and if for some reason that ripped or it was tore off or just didn't come out, we have another rocket. We have another chute with a rocket attached to an air rocket that is going to launch it out at an angle with a real long lanyard. So it'll shoot that thing way up and around the other chute so it won't get tangled. So, I mean, we got a real good chance of getting this back. And we've made some structural changes in with some chromoly and things like that. And, we're going to do it this time. I'm really looking forward to doing it. It's gotten stretched out a little bit. We're working on the network right now. And once the contract's signed, we'll be ready to go out and do it.
Did you know Evel personally?
Yes, I did.
Were you guys friends or competitors?
Well, I knew him. many years ago, the first time I met him, I actually showed him a picture of my great uncle coming off a ski jump in 1905, which I have. If you go on my site, you'll see that, and on a bicycle. And he set the world record at around 60 feet back in 1905. But anyways, I showed him that picture, because he said that, they kind of upped the deal. He was the first jumper and all that.
Uh-huh.
So that's how that acquaintance became. And then when I heard that he wanted to jump over to Grand Canyon, I contacted him and I told him, hey, I'm real interested in building a rocket cycle for him. And I told him that I would do that for $15,000. And he says, back in the 70s, that's what he knows that time. That's exactly what it would have cost me to build that. No labor or nothing, just the parts. And he said, well, you can't build that thing for under $250,000. And consequently, he went with Bob Truex, and they built that cycle. But that's all it came about. I came very close to building that. And now I'm involved with Scott Truex, Bob's son.
Yeah, Bob's passed away.
All these many years later, 40-some years later, and we're building a rocket that's going to be jumping over the Snake River. I think that's pretty cool.
Small world, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So we got some involvement, and we built the chutes on it, and they helped a little bit in the design and made some major changes as far as strengthening it and things like that, yes.
Do you recover your rockets when they go to space? Do they come down in a soft landing with a chute, or are they just...
Yes, they do. Well, yeah, our first one we recovered on, with the chute, the payload section. The booster came off at about 40,000 feet. It had a chute on it. And we suspect that the aft end of the motor, where there was a hook, I should say, an eye hook that with our parachute was attached to, we think the heat went up through that, penetrated through that, and then actually cut the chute. It was nylon. But we recovered that. Now, the second one, oh, that's a story in itself. I forgot about it. But the second one, when we launched, we actually had... FAA's tracking equipment, some of their equipment on board to track, and lo and behold, it failed. So we lost the rocket, and we had helicopters and planes and all the flat tires and everything, but we couldn't find it. Well, about 3 weeks later, Jerry Larson had gotten a call, I believe, from
that
NORAD had tracked that rocket. And so they gave him two data points and went back in and found it, and they yanked it back out again. That's all. We're able to get our cameras back, and we lost all our data. We wouldn't have had no data at all if we wouldn't have, if we wouldn't have been able to find it. But to this point, we haven't found the booster on that one yet.
To launch the second one, did you have as many hell-raising stories of getting to the desert to launch it as you did with the first one?
No, they were very cooperative. I will tell you that. And it was just all kind of like buddy-buddy. Everybody was nice to everybody. We didn't have that same tension that we had before. And then, the tension was really bad the first time around. I think there was a lot of hard feeling. Well, there was a lot of hard feelings. So things have changed a lot in that department as far as the amateurs launch a rocket in space and things like that. And they can actually go online now and even start the procedure. So at least they got a place to start with.
Have any other amateurs gone to space, or is it just you?
No. I'm really surprised of that, to be honest with you, because, I didn't do it for a monetary reason or anything like that. There's a couple of reasons why I did it, but I really thought I was opening the doors for others to follow, and nobody followed us. There's been a couple of attempts, some universities and things like that have tried, but nobody's made it yet.
Well, what about Up Aerospace? Because that's a derivative of you.
That's a different deal because that's professional. But, off from the CSXC team, Jerry Larson and Bruce Lee and a couple of the other people, from the team went forward, and then they started Up Aerospace. And they've got at least 10 launches now, successful launches, and they've all been around 72, 73 miles up with payloads, and they've recovered them all. They've done very well.
I know Celestis, my sponsor, uses them.
Yes.
For launches. And when I launched my mom and dogs to space several years ago, it was on an Up Aerospace rocket with Jerry's team.
Yes. Well, they're doing quite well. It's coming along, and I know they got some contracts coming up. They went forward and they're doing it. But as far as any, they're professional. As far as any amateurs, nobody that I know of. There's been much talk, and a number of universities have tried, and they failed. It's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing.
And I can imagine. So, what is this documentary that your crowdfunding program wanted to finance?
Well, it all kind of started out. When the book that, when we were coming back from the Stumman's Hall of Fame, we were in a motorhome, and the guys had a keg of beer in there, and anyways, I don't drink and stuff. So they said, hey, Kai, tell us the story about it. And then, hey, Kai, tell us the story about it. So anyways, I was wrapping on, and finally Jimmy says, Kai, you've been talking for almost 7 hours. You haven't told the same story twice. And then Bruce Lee says, well, Kai, you ought to write a book. And I says, write a book? I can't write. You know that. So I came home, and I was all excited about, telling some of the stories. So I had my wife start helping me, And after a few days of that, she said, you know, Kai, you'll never sell this book. And that just encouraged me to get up early in the morning, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and search out keys and go peck, peck, and then fight with spell check. And off from that, you know, till a little over 2 years later, I got my book published, and, you know, so it's there. So, meanwhile, because of all these stories and me talking about this stuff, it, you know, it led to a producer who I'd worked with in the past, and I was telling her some of these stories, and she said, same thing. You got to make them. We got to make a movie on you. And that was the start of it. It's because of the interesting things and that I've been able to do, and the fact that, you know, I'm dyslexic. You know, I learned how to read and write when I wrote that book. I mean, you know, also I got married at 16, and so my wife took care of me for 21 years, doing all my correspondence and stuff when I was racing, things like that. And then I ended up owning some companies that I started, and so my employees helped me out there, you know, secretary and stuff like that. But finally, you know, when I got right down to it, you know, I taught myself. I'm still, you know, my grammar's pretty bad. You can hear that. But as long as I got spell check, I do pretty darn good.
How'd you manage plans and engineering drawings and stuff for your rockets?
Well, you know, I'm kind of a lot of things. Well, I did a lot of study on sounding rockets and stuff and pictures. I'm a picture kind of guy. And I'm also am not afraid to ask. And as we started that team, you know, the CSXT team, it started out just with my wife and I. And then we went out to BlackRock. More people got involved, more people that specialized or have some knowledge of certain areas, and we all just pulled together as a team. And that's how we were able to do it. I did the basic, battle and opening of the doors with the government and stuff like that. I worked with them for some time. And I headed up the team and figured out how to do it and never gave up. That's why we were able to do it.
You have a caller on hold. Do you want to take your call and see what's up first, or do you want to continue?
Sure, that's fine. Whatever way you want to go.
Okay. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you and where are you, please?
I'm Rick. I'm from near Lititz, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask, Kai, why did you decide to go with hydrogen peroxide for propellant? Why not solid fuel or hybrid for your different creation?
Well, my vehicles, you're talking about my rocket cars. I build all kinds of rocket-powered vehicles with hydrogen peroxide. And because you're running on, you know, tracks, we were approved by NHRA to run on tracks. And because of insurance of any of the rocket fuels that are out there, I would say that hydrogen peroxide was the safest. You know, as long as you handle it right, you got water, it's pretty safe fuel. And, but, you know, as far as a solid propellant motor, you know, once you light them, you can't turn them off. The peroxide motors, you have a full throttle ability to throttle them. And you could drive just like a regular car. You can stop and go. You can go 5 miles an hour, or you can go 400 miles an hour. So consequently, we built, you know, a number of rocket hydrogen peroxide rocket vehicles. As far as the space goes, you know, the Pacific Impulse is way down on the peroxide and the weight and all the rest. And at the time, we couldn't get 90% hydrogen peroxide. We were just able to get that in the last few years here now.
Now, with your GoFast rocket, why not hybrid with that? Why not hydrogen peroxide with that?
Well, then again, it's because of the weight and the complexity. It brings in a lot more complexity into that. Personally, I don't think we would have... I don't think that we would have got approved to fly as amateurs using liquid propellants. I think that's still a ways away.
They want you to use solids, right?
Yes, yes. And the fuel is heavy, and it's very, you know, it's about $100, $120 a gallon, and so you're going to burn up a lot of fuel to get into space. A lot of fuel.
So it would be cheaper with solid fuel.
Oh, yes, much cheaper. Much cheaper, yes.
And one last question. When you were first making black powder and starting to make your own rocket motors, about what class motor would you say you were starting out with? Like A motors, B motors?
Well, I had no idea because we first started out as firecrackers, and then went from firecrackers to bombs. And it wasn't too long. The guy down at the hardware store, Bosco down at the hardware store, said, you know, we should start building rockets. He helped us out a little bit and showed us on nozzles and things like that. But, you know, some of the firecrackers and things, they you know, blew the ends off. And it wasn't long before we were using and making some plaster Paris nozzles. And later on, we ended up getting some, I don't know where we got it from a dentist. We got some plaster flares. But, you know, we started building rockets, and before you know it, we were shooting them up, and then we were putting them on wooden cars and shooting them down the alley. So I grew up from the era where, you know, you could mess around with firecrackers, and the chemistry sets would teach you how to make black powder, and you could go down the drugstore and get all the chemicals. And we all live in a different era now. You can't even mention the word bomb anymore.
Yeah, I grew up in that era. We had a Gibson chemistry set that actually had black powder and explosives in it.
Yeah,
that you
great?
Could buy. Yeah, and we could do all of that stuff. We could fire model rockets off in our backyard, and the police and the fire department wouldn't, and the neighbors wouldn't come yelling. So it was a really different world.
Yes, it was. And, you know, we were blessed to. I don't feel that this country will ever have the years that we had. We had the best years that this country ever had to offer.
I agree. I agree with you. I don't know how old you are. I'm 69, but I agree with you, Kai.
I'm 77 years old now.
Yeah, so same kind of general era.
Totally. Well, you know, we're in different times now, and you know, we were able to do a lot of things. You know, one of the memories real quick that I liked about it, we had 30 kids on our block. And back then, you didn't have air conditioning, so everybody had their windows open, so everybody knew who was fighting with who. You didn't know everybody's presence. There was always good humor at night. That was fun stuff.
You hear them through the open windows, yeah. Rick, what else for you?
The only thing I'd say is when you were doing those early rockets, was that about the same time Homer Hickam was doing his stuff, do you know?
Yeah, I guess it was, but you know, the stuff we built and what they built were two different things. We built much bigger rockets, and then we got into the zinc and sulfur stuff and started building, you know, quite pretty good size. We're using like 5-pound fire extinguishers, made Nella nozzles on them, and fill them full of match heads, and we'd tape a stick or even a hockey stick, broken off hockey stick, and we were launching these things back then, and back in the 50s, you know, and I started out. See, I started hanging out with kids that are older than me, but I was 13 years old when I built my first rocket.
Wow.
and then back in, we got up into the mid-60s there, and I got involved with the Turbinik rockets, and I'm still around. Luckily, I built a motorcycle, a twin-engine motorcycle with Turbineks on it. And I brought it up to Union Grove, and at that point, they said, here comes Rocket Man. You know, and that was kind of the start of the thing. And then we ended up acquiring the X1 rocket car, which we turned into a Sonic Challenger snowmobile, which is hydrogen peroxide. And that was my first experience with hydrogen peroxide, which was in 1969. And then we went ahead and we built a number of rocket-powered cars. And Ed Ballinger and myself and some other drivers, we ended up setting like 72 state, national, and international speed records through the years. So after we did that, I just started looking at space for a new thing, a new challenge, you know.
And you were doing stunts in movies and stuff all the time.
Yeah. All between and that. That's my income and stuff. I was working in the film business, getting involved in a lot of really. I worked with Don Robinson, who was the number one stuntman in Hollywood, and we developed a lot of the stunt equipment they use in Hollywood today. A lot of that came right out of our shop up here in Minneapolis. And then I got involved with Kitty O'Neill, and Kitty, you know, she went over 500 miles an hour in a rocket car, and she set a number of records in my car, and then she went 275 in a boat, and she was actually Wonder Woman's double, so I was, you know, blessed to be able to work with her, and she's the top stunt woman, the top stunt man in the business I worked with, and I learned a lot from them, that's for sure, and I think they learned something from me.
Rick, anything else?
That's all for now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Rick, thanks for calling. Now, you have a nice evening now.
You too.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
So, listeners, our line is available. If you would like to give us a call, it is 1-866-687-7223 and email drspace@thespaceshow.com. Let's pick back up on your documentary, because this film is in progress of being made already, correct?
Yes, it is, yes. Well, they have all this footage of our rocket stuff, you know, and dealing with the government stuff that it's going to become very interesting, you know, all put together. And they have, you know, things from back when I was young. And it's a story that, you know, what I really like about this is going to be really a good tool for me to go out to schools and to talk to kids about dyslexia, you know, and because I know how they felt, I know how I feel, I know how I still feel. And how I was scared to death to go to school. And yet, you know, I was able to do all these things because I never gave up. And I wasn't afraid to ask questions. But when I was young, I was really bashful. I mean, very bashful. So because of that, I didn't ask questions. I was scared to death to go to school. And, I flunked school, went to summer school. And then finally, what happened was my father wanted me to be in electronics. And, so he started teaching me about crystal sets and things like that. And so I started making little crystal sets and building them and putting them in these plastic cigarette cases. And so anyway, seeing my math book was no good, seeing I couldn't read it. And by the way, the teacher would tell me something 20 times and walk away, and I couldn't repeat it. So that's how messed up I was back then. But anyways, I took my math book, and I cut it out and built a radio on it, and I brought it to school and showed it to the kids. And before you know, I got it sitting on my desk, and I got my hand on it, and with the earphone going up through my sleeve. And the teacher knew something was suspicious, and she grabs this book from me. And it was attached to a wire, and, she took us, what is this? And I said, please, Mrs. Becker, please don't take this from me. She says, what is this? I said, the radio. She says, where'd you get that radio? I said, I wound the coils, soldered it, all the wires in, put the dials in. You built this radio? Yeah, I built this radio. And that was the first bit of positive of anything that I got in that school. And I think that's why I continue to build. I don't think there's been a time in my life where I haven't been building something. And it all, and you know, then I started building other things and bringing them to school. Kai's little cremator. I took my mom's pickle jar, a piece of wood in the bottom and the top, and put a nail through each end, and put a hot dog in, a couple wires, and plug it into 110, and it would fry a hot dog.
you did that today, Kai. They'd say you're building a bomb to school, and you'd be arrested.
Oh yeah. Oh, are you kidding? Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh, it just goes on and on and on. You know what? Here, think about this. Here, they don't allow shop classes because they're afraid you're going to get cut on a saw or something.
Yeah,
but isn't it ironic they allow football and contact sports where kids get their butts, their backs screwed up, their knees screwed up, brain concussions, and they actually die for brain concussions. And they're messed up the rest of their life, and they play football, but they won't allow the kids to do things and learn with their hands. We got a deal going up here in Minneapolis right now. I heard on TV last night. They're all concerned because there's little bits of rubber are on the field where they're playing. And that rubber could injure them somehow if they ingested it, and they don't know what's in the rubber. And yet they don't stop to think about all the head injuries, the back injuries, the knee injuries that are going to affect their kids for life. I can't figure that game out at all.
Well, they'll probably
figure it out.
I suspect in 5 or 7 years they'll probably stop it.
There'll be a lot of injuries before then. That's all I'm going to say.
You got another caller waiting for you.
Okay.
Hi, caller. You're on the line with Kai Michelson. Who are you and where are you, please?
Yeah, I'd like to ask the Rocket Man a question there.
Who are you? Who is it?
Oh my God. That's Captain Jack.
Oh, Captain.
Oh, my God. He's 90 years old. Are you ready for this? He's 90 years old, and he drives a rocket-powered go-kart that's capable of going over 200 miles an hour plus.
Wow.
How you doing, Captain?
I'm doing fine. I realize this is a space show, so of all the times I've talked with you about rockets, I've never really asked you about the rocket you sent up for the record. How much thrust does that rocket really put out, and how long is the burn?
Well, there's a spike on it. It went up to about 17,000 pounds, and it's about a 12-second burn. Can you imagine putting that thing on four wheels and going with four wheels? We went 1,300 miles, over 3,000 miles an hour. Can you imagine putting that motor on four wheels in a driver's seat? That'd be
I think it was too long to fit on my vehicle.
Jack has got a rocket powered go kart that he runs around the country, and we were over in Aruba here last year, and we had to. Good time over there. Great time.
And you still drive it, Captain Jack? You're the driver of it?
Oh, yes, yes. The owner and the driver.
Yeah, he's only 90 years old.
As a matter of fact, it's a hydrogen peroxide rocket motor. And it lost a little of its power because it was built back in 1971. And it laid idle for about 30 years. And then I got it back out, and Kai, in fact, the matter, he restored it for me. And we've run it for the last couple of years around over the country. And as Kai said, we were in Aruba last year. And it lost a little bit of its power. And Kai actually has the motor now. He cut it apart. He and the rest of the Rocket Boys up there are working on it. And what we're looking for right now is 200 miles an hour and 1/8 mile. I used to do close to that a long time ago, but Kai is guaranteed we're going to do it again.
And you're going to drive.
We're going to do it when you're 90, there, Jack. And then we got to think about what we're going to do when you're 100.
You're going to be the driver of it, right, Jack?
Oh yeah. I wouldn't think of letting anybody else do it.
Good for you.
By the way, we have to Velcro Jack into the seat so he doesn't come out of that thing.
Yeah.
good for you.
Yeah, he's a young guy. Well, we're bringing back Kurt Anderson up here in Minneapolis, so we're able to get more 90% peroxide now, and we've been building some rocket-powered vehicles. We just put together a rocket-powered snowmobile, which Kurt is planning on going 300 miles an hour on it next winter. Our winter was here and it was just gone, and we just finished up the sled. And also then he's got another rocket car that we've run for a couple of years, that we've been doing some running with. But I'm helping Kurt out, and he's involved in, I'm hoping that he's going to go out and break all the records that we set, you know, like 40 years ago. Some of those records and ones that Kitty set and stuff are still sitting there. So, you know, that's a project that's coming down the road to go out and then break those records again. I would love to see somebody else do that.
Very cool.
Yeah, well, now, Kai,
yeah.
I haven't heard you mention the rocket car you're building for Buddy.
Oh, yeah. Well, my 16-year-old boy, his real name is Rocket Man, is Buddy Rocket Man Michelson. We're building a vehicle that's actually, it's a steam-powered rocket. And basically we're boiling water, you know, up to about 375, 400, and there's some throttle valves. And it's very, very similar to the motor that Evil used in the Snake River jump. And so, you know, with these top fuel cars that cost many, many thousands of dollars per run, we can go 300 miles an hour just on $25 worth of propane and water. So it's a new thing that we're doing, and my son is learning. He's 16 years old now, and he's learning how to work with his hands and do some engineering and bend aluminum and weld. And so it's kind of like my son's college education, that vehicle that we're building on our shop right now.
So you haven't really slowed down at all, have you, Kai?
No, I'm not planning on it either. Yeah, we always got a couple of projects in the fire.
He always slows down when his bad knee gives out.
Yeah.
Are you going to want...
Yeah, gets around pretty darn good. So,
well, you know, they tell us old people that age is only a number anyway.
Yeah, you got that.
Not
sure.
Saying that Kai is that old. I think I got about, I don't know, 12, 15 years on him. But
I'm young next to you, but the man, the way this guy gets around is incredible. He still crawls underneath the stuff, and he does over the road. He works for large trucks and things like that, or payloads that they haul across the country. Jack still drives all across the country.
Wow. Are you going to launch another rocket to space, Kai?
You know, I have no reason to do that right now. You know, I've got some things in mind, though. I do, to be honest with you, I do have some things in mind. Once we get through this Snake River thing,
uh-huh.
and my movie, which I really want to work with that project and go out and help kids. But after that, you know, I got some things in the back of my head where I'd like to go back again, yes.
Would you ever consider trying to launch a person into space?
Of course.
Is that one of the things you're thinking about?
Yep.
So you're thinking human spaceflight?
Yes.
Wow. An amateur launching a human into space.
Well, you know, my son's growing up, and we're, and who knows what direction that he wants to go in. And, You know, I'm hoping that, you know, he's going to follow my footsteps, which I'm pretty sure that he will. So there's another generation of Michelsons that are coming out there that are going to be building and know how to dream and know how to follow up with that dream. So I'm pretty sure that down the road he'll be doing something, and hopefully I'll be right there to see it.
I hope so, too. Jack, do you have anything further for Kai?
Well, not really. I just wanted to put my 2 cents in and not let him get away with all the glory.
All right. Hey, Jim, thanks for coming, man. I love you, and I can't wait to see you again, buddy.
We going on, I don't know, almost 45 years friendship.
Yeah, we've been friends for a long time. He's a good guy. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jack, for calling.
Thanks for the call, Jack.
All right, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. So, listeners, the line is available again, 1-866-687-7223. You think we'll hear about your documentary? Can you complete telling us about it?
Well, yes. GRB Entertainment.
Hold on, Kai, you got another call.
Yeah, sure.
See how popular you are? Hi, you're on the space show with Kai Michelson. Who are you and where are you, please?
My name is Kurt Anderson, and I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Hi, Kurt.
How you doing,
Kai?
He's been talking about you.
Yeah, your ears must be ringing.
Well, good stuff, I hope.
Oh, yeah, good stuff. Yep, awesome. Kurt is a good guy, and he's following his dreams, too. He's not a talker, he's a doer, and right now he's doing it. It's incredible what he's done here in the last few years now.
Yeah.
Yep, and you know, the whole rocket thing, you know, I got the bug from Kai, and, you know, I'm all in. That's all I can say.
Good for you. Were you on the teams that launched to space?
Yeah, well, I helped in the 2014... I helped assist on that one, so the second one.
He was out there. He got to. Oh, we got a few flat tires out there too, didn't we?
Oh my God, I think it was a world record, actually.
A rental car looked like it went to a demolition derby. I hope they're not listening.
Well, they shouldn't have given us paper thin tires to get on the flyout. That was good. That's the bad thing.
Do you still have all sorts of issues about carrying rocket motors and rocket fuel across state lines and stuff like that?
Well, you know, there is a, you know, now with the whole Homeland Security and stuff, the rules are pretty well laid out. And yeah, there's precautions for it. And so you have to, you know, we follow it by the book. And, you know, the big thing is really just tracking everything, reporting, and knowing what to do if something shows up missing. So we're all trained in on that. And it hasn't, you know, I don't really foresee problems going forward. It's just, it took us a while to get to the point where, you know, we know the rules and, you know, we had to bake in the process with, you know, all of everything we do, so.
Okay. Kurt, what do you do other than when you're working with Kai?
Well, I'm actually working almost full time on the rocket project, but I also I own an internet company and we have data centers, so we you know, host big applications on the internet and have the facilities to do that. So that's kind of my background.
Okay.
Well, we've never had the shop before. You know, I've all just about everything I've ever built is right out of my house. I have a big garage in my big shop in my house. But Kurt is all set up with, over 5,000 square feet now. And, I mean, he's got every piece of equipment that you can't even imagine for shaping metal and welding and vacuum forming and even plating silver screens. And he's got a complete setup for building rocket-powered vehicles. So, I mean, there's going to be some big things coming out of Kurt's shop down the road. I'll tell you that right now. Some really big things.
Cool.
Yeah.
Anything else cool, Kurt, that you want to talk about? Otherwise, we're about to go to break.
You know, it's an amazing technology. I think, you know, what Kai really opened my eyes up to was, you know, this you know, the technology, how clean it is, you know, and the right, you know, and how controllable it is. And, you know, so that, I'm just really, you know, I was just really amazed once I, you know, learned about peroxide and what it could do and how to control it. And, you know, we're just, I'm just really, I think it's an amazing technology that's got a lot more potential than I think has been realized in the past. So that's one of my missions alongside, you know, with breaking all the records and stuff is really to, you know, show some of the efficiencies of this and how clean it is. And that's, I don't know. I mean, that's a little side thing. A side thing that I've kind of come to realize going through the whole learning about it and seeing what it can do.
Okay. Do you have anything else that you want to bring up with Kai?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, when are we going to go into space again? When's the next rocket launch?
As soon as we get more inspired and get a couple more projects. You know, we need to get that Canyon deal done and a couple other things and get the movie done, and then we should. I mentioned when I was just talking to David that down the road, I think that we should do you know, another project, you know, with space.
Right.
And I think somebody should be on board, at least for a good flight up, you know.
Right. Well, I think that's a worthy mission.
Well,
you know,
I suggest you start going on a diet so we have a real genuine astronaut. How's that sound?
I don't think it'll be me. I'm into that bird, but
okay. All right, buddy. Hey, thanks for calling. Appreciate
right,
it. You take
awesome.
Care now.
Thank you. Kai, we're at the halfway point, so we'll go ahead and pause for a couple of minutes, and then we'll come back, okay?
Sure.
Okay, so listeners, don't go anywhere. We'll be back in about 3 minutes with Kai Michelson. Again, email is drspace@thespaceshow.com, and the toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. And if you want to know how to put an amateur rocket into space, this is the guy to talk to. He's done it 2 times. Back in 3 minutes.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Tuesday Evening Space Show, and our guest is Kai Michelson. We have two sponsors for the second part of our show. Integrated Space Analytics is the producer of the Integrated Space Plan, a highly detailed development chart of how we will become a truly spacefaring race. See how technologies and destinations build upon one another, and explore each of the hundreds of individual elements in more detail on their website, which is thespaceplan.com. Jay Whitner, Ron Jones, and Gary Bickford invite you to attend their ISP presentation Thursday, May 19th, and participate in integrated space plan activities at the ISDC conference in May, which is going to be in San Juan, Puerto Rico. The Integrated Space Plan is useful and an inspiring tool that should be on the wall for everyone serious about space development, so check them out at thespaceplan.com. Orbital ATK is also our second half sponsor. They are a global leader in aerospace and defense technology. They're the partner you can count on for advanced, reliable space propulsion systems for space exploration, commercial venture, and defense programs. So check them out as well. And we're talking with Kai Michelson, who is, I guess one would say, the only amateur to have sent two rockets, not just one, but two rockets into space. And he knows what that is like. Kai, to get an amateur rocket to space, what did you have to do that was, what was the biggest thing you had to do to get it to go to space over, say, more typical amateur rockets? Like if you went to a amateur rocket show, you know, or something like that.
You have to work with the FAA and get approval with them. And you have to go through that. And, of course, you have to insurance and a number of things that come up to it. But, you know, it's much easier now. At least, you know, when we started this, they never even had an official form to even start the procedure. And at least they have that. And you can go online. And, you know, another thing that's kind of interesting is, see, Tripoli, which is a rocket organization, right, amateur rocket organization, they've gotten involved with that now, and they can help you work with the approval and the paperwork to actually, you know, if you join Tripoli to start with, which is really good anyways, they can help you to, you know, get involved with the government and get some of the legal paperwork out of the way.
But still nobody else has done it.
You know, I hear a lot of talk. And I just don't understand it. And like I mentioned before, it's, you know, that was my dream to open the doors for others to follow.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there was a lot of talk. And I'll never forget, see, a lot of the members out, or the people who are listening tonight, don't remember the Katz Prize. It was called a Cheap Access to Space.
Yeah.
Well, I started this before, I started my quest for space in 1995, before the Katz Prize started up. And, you know, we had a meeting out in California, and there was at least 25 groups of people. And every one of them said that they were going to do it, you know. And, you know, here I show up with my sweatpants and, you know, racing shirts on, and I don't exactly look like the guy who's got a ton of money. And, you know, of course, I'm going to do it. And I just say, nah, I'm going to do it. You know, believe me, I'm going to do it. And I don't think anybody thought that I would be the one to do it, but, It's all about character and never giving up. That had a lot to do with that. And as it turned out, all those 25 groups that were there, we were the only one that got up the bat and actually swung at the ball. So, and since then, I keep hearing about the projects and everybody's building this and that. But so far, I don't see any success. And I don't know why that is. I truly don't. It takes dedication. I want to tell you, you got to really, you know, when in 1995 I quit doing all my work in the film business, in the stunt world. I stopped everything, and I just put 100% into the space shot until we all finally did it.
And that was took you 9 years.
Yeah, it wasn't an overnight deal, you know. But now, I see no reason why. Everything is out there now. I mean, you can copy everything that we've done, and the paperwork is available to do now. It's just a matter of really putting some hours in and some dedication and do it, you know, and do some research, because one of the things we found out is you can't upscale rocket motors, and we had some problems there and leak buys and stuff like that, and then we finally figured all that out, you know, where we had successful motors.
What do you think it would cost to put an amateur rocket to space today?
Well, you definitely could do it under $100,000 if you do it the first time around. I'm not sure about, you know, you may have problems with the insurance. That's another thing. You know, like up aerospace. You know, I think the insurance up there where they launch is around $30,000, and that's a lot of money. And you know, it's up by and, you know, it's military up there and all that. So,
right.
Yeah, you know, so consequently, you know, it's a little bit different deal. But BlackRock, you know, to go out to BlackRock where we did it, I think you could still go out there and do it. And, you know, they threw some things at us back then that I'm not sure that they would do now. I think things are easier. You know, they want us to block off the roads, and at the time they wanted like $3,500 a day to block the roads off, and, you know, things that just didn't have, that were not needed to do that, caused, you know, more expense. But, you can definitely do it for under $100,000.
Pamela in Seattle has sent you an email and says, when is your documentary going to be completed and how can we see it?
Well, the best thing is just to, you know, if you go into my Facebook, we'll be posting in there. Or you can go into Facebook and look under Rocketman Doc. Do that, and DLC, and they'll keep you up to date. Right now, it's planned for 2017, so hopefully you'll be finished by then, and it's going to be hit the theaters, and eventually it's going to hit television. The producer of the show is Colette Sunstead. She's also the director, but we're also involved with GRB Entertainment for distribution, and Gary Benz at GRB Entertainment. They own Intervention, ER, they own, well, over 1,000 hours of shows. So, you know, this thing is going to get really good distribution once we get it out there. And so, you know, I'm so excited and just looking forward to happening, that's for sure.
Did they come to you or was this your idea?
When I was working on a show with Colette, and she started talking to me about, I used to be a stuntman, you know, and I used to race cars, and I put a rocket in the space, and she's going, what? And I said, yeah, you know, check me out, you'll see, you know. And so she starts checking me out, a little bit old I did. And then I said, yeah, but the great thing, you know, the thing that's really strange about it is, you know, I'm totally dyslexic. She knew that I was when she was talking to me. But and she said, you know, that would make a great movie. You know, it really would. She's like, okay, you are dyslexic. Yeah. She says, how were you able to do all these things? Well, I'm a pretty good team builder, you know, and that's the big thing. And I brought people onto the team that knew, you know, I could get information out, that could do technical things that I was not capable of doing. I could do anything mechanically with my hands. That I can do. I can build anything. And, but there's, you know, and when it comes to rocket motors, there's a whole bunch of math involved. And, Jerry Larson, I mean, he was the big part of this whole thing that came in when Jerry came in and, with his expertise and he started working with the government because I wasn't getting along too good with the government at the time. And, but we came together as a team and, more and more started coming out of the woodwork. What's really neat about it is in 2004, we had all these people around the country building different component parts, and then we showed up in the desert and we assembled them. I mean, that's a heck of a story. And then be pushed the button and launch it into space. You know, that's pretty darn cool, I think.
Yeah, and it launched, it did it the first time.
We had a couple failures before that. You know, in 95, well, I started in 95 with the, and I built smaller motors, but we had two big rocket motor failures, and we were dealing with the weather out there where the sand came through and wiped out all our electronics, and my mom's last words were, Kai, I know you'll do it this time, and I went out there and she died when I was there.
Oh,
and
shit.
I mean, I had this stuff, I want to tell you something, there was a couple of years that I was not happy, and I was really dragged down by all the red tape and everything was gone, and I just made up my mind I was going to quit no matter what I lost in my life. I was not going to quit, and I ended up spending all my life savings, to be honest with you. When you don't work for the 9 years and then take your savings and dump it into that project, you know, that money went quick.
So did it pay back after you were successful?
No, I've never made a penny, only in the fact that it paid back. Is that, you know, I did it, and I feel good about it. I know eventually that more people are going to be following my footsteps. And, you know, one of the things I'm proud of is, you know, I got an email from Burt Rutan, you know, congratulating. We beat him in the space. I thought that was pretty cool.
Absolutely. Have any astronauts ever contacted you?
Well, I've talked to a number of astronauts. You know, I've met Buzz Aldrin and Pete Conrad. Actually, Pete Conrad had done a show on me, the World of Wonders. He did the voiceover on the show. So I was able to meet him. Well, I met him a couple other times, but I also he autographed the script for it, which is pretty neat, before he passed away.
Yeah. On a motorcycle, too.
Yes. Yeah, he was a pretty good guy. Really, I liked him. He had some pretty good humor in him.
he might have been a NASA administrator, and one can only wonder what NASA would have looked like had he been in charge for a couple of years.
I mean, he's kind of off the wall, kind of like I am.
Yeah, but I mean,
I only wish I was him, though.
I know his wife, and I can tell you that what a loss.
Yes.
What a loss with Pete Conrad. That's probably the best way to sum it up.
Yes.
Loss of opportunity, loss of a lot of things. Young people going up, I mean, they can't as easily as what you did go play with rockets, and they can't even fire an Estes rocket, you know, in their backyard.
You know, can't, but the best thing for them to do is to join Tripoli.
Join the rocket club, okay.
Yes, join Tripoli Rocket Club. And you'll be able to go out and build, and everybody's going to help you too. Everybody will work with you there. You'll learn an awful lot that people will mentor other people, and before you know it, you'll be launching 20-foot rockets, and at that point, you're going to say, wow, I'd sure like to put a rocket into space. So that's a good start. You know, we didn't have all that, and plus they have insurance too, which is, so you can go, once you join, there, you know, just about every state, there's a prefect, a Tripoli prefect, where you can go and actually, launch rockets out legally, and they do all the paperwork and everything to do that. So,
yeah, and they have.
I would advise, if you're interested in rocketry, to look up Tripoli Rocket Association on the internet and join and find a prefect in your area, and that's a real good way to go.
You've got John is in Tucson, and he says, I'm looking at the Indiegogo program. It appears that your program is over with, but can people still contribute? And does part of what you raise go to the dyslexic organization?
The dyslexic organization, okay, first off, if you go into the Rocketman doc, and you can contact the people there, and you can still donate to that. And I will assure you, one thing is to, you know, take a small amount of the money. You know, we raised like $40,000, which in the film business is not a lot of money, but they raised that money to get some more interviews from people in my past. But I will assure you that this, when this is done, I'm going to dedicate a good share of my life going to schools and playing this movie in the schools, and to encourage other people with dyslexia to show, hey, look at you, look what I did, and you can do it, and give the self-confidence. But this, to me, is going to be like a tool in my toolbox, and I will assure you I'm going to use this to the point where, you know, it'd be better than millions and millions of dollars put out there. But I know that I'm going to be going to a couple of schools already, and I've done this for years, by the way. I go to the, you know, all the various schools and organizations and give our talk. So once this film comes out, I will tell you, this is like a tool in the toolbox that I know is going to encourage a lot of people out there with dyslexia. And I was on a plane here coming back from California not very long ago. I'm sitting next to a woman, and she started crying about her 30-year-old son that had dyslexia. And he had no self-confidence, and she didn't know where to go with it, you know. Well, hopefully this is going to open up the eyes for, you know, hopefully that this is going to open up the doors and the eyes of other people that will jump in and help other people and understand dyslexia. See, I never knew I was dyslexic until I was 30 years old. And when, on a television show, I just, you know, it's me that I fight with my brain all the time, one side to the other. I fight with it all the time. But now, you know, I understand what's going on in my brain. It's hard to explain. But one side of my I'm very, very intelligent about one side, very gifted on one side. And the other side is just like, duh. You know, sometimes it's just like, it's so, you know, things that I should be able to. I mean, if you were around me, you would never believe it. But I'm going to tell you, this is the God's truth. My 9-year-old boy, buddy, taught me. He's 16 now, so those years back. That's when I learned my ABCs. I could not memorize and recite the ABCs. And he would sing that song, ABCD, to me and make fun of me. And he says, come on, Dad. So finally one day I got up to H or I or J or whatever it was. And I was going, and he says, Dad, what was the next size rocket you launched? And I says, K. And I says, wow. And he says, and what was the next size rocket? And before you know it, because rocketry, you know, a B motor is twice as big as a A.
Yeah, and on and on up. Uh-huh.
And it goes right up the alphabet. And so he skated me through the alphabet by me familiarizing with things that I've done in the past. And my son figured that out at 9 years of age. So he was a pretty smart kid, but I could, that's got a true story. But that's how I learned. To this day, I cannot divide. But guess what? I got Google. I go on the Google. I'm a smart guy now. I go that, you know, I'm like a mathematician now. I can go out there and figure most problems out now. Just in Google, I try to go into every night. I try to go into YouTube and punch in something. I mean, if you want to know how to cut your fingernails, it'll teach you how to cut your fingernails. So there's no excuse for not knowing. Well, I don't know. There's no excuse for not knowing because you got Google. And punch into it, and I'll tell you what, it's going to explain, and it's going to more than likely show you a video. So, boy, I just love the computer, I'll tell you that. Not at first, but now I'm in love with the computer.
Here, I got a couple more questions for you. This is from Mac, M-A-C, like the Mac computer, and he's in York, Pennsylvania. Do you develop the rocket hardware only, or do you and your team write the software, telemetry, and navigation, etc.?
Well, first off, there's no navigation at all. One of the things that when they license it, that we cannot navigate. As far as where it's going to land and stuff like that, but as far as steering and that goes, you know, we can't the fins where we spin these things. We spin it at 6 times per second. You know, if you go into YouTube and see that video, see that spinning?
Uh-huh.
And it's a real interesting video, which brings up another subject, by the way. You'll see that the rocket is spinning, and then once... it gets up to apogee, there's actually, it's called a D-spin, where there's a cable wrapped around it with a weight, with explosive charge. And so what happens, you send it a signal, and it releases that weight, and it unwraps. And when it does that, it stops it from spinning, very similar to what a yo-yo would do. And another thing that you'll see there is the ping, and that's where, see, we have directional motor C4 that we cut the rocket in half and drop the booster off. Now, if you go on the internet, there's a few people that believe that the Earth is flat, and has made a big deal out of that, and that proves that the Earth is flat. And I get these phone calls from these guys, and
are they for real?
Yes, and you have no idea how many they are that are for real. And so I put this offer out, which I drive a 78 Corvette Indy car, and I put the offer out, I'll give anybody my Corvette to take the picture of the first guy that jumps off the edge of the Earth. So far, I haven't heard from no pictures yet, but I want to tell you something. They believe it. You go in there, and there's hundreds of people that believe it, that they're this way.
No, I can imagine, because I used to, and I used to put them on the air, and I won't do it anymore, the people who believe we never went to the moon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the next thing that they'll come up with that one, too. Yeah, they know that.
You know, and... you know, so when I was starting the space show, I'd give them airtime. And then I decided, oh, this is just a circular trip to nonsense land. So why bother? And then they get hostile. And so, you know, I just won't do it anymore. But I imagine the flat Earth people are of the same caliber or lacking of some caliber. I don't know how you would really say that. What about the rest of what Max said other than navigation? Do you develop the rocket hardware, or do you just work with software? There's no telemetry, I guess, right?
No. Well, actually, Jerry is Jerry Larson's the one that did all that work, as a matter of fact. And, and later on, the paperwork and the calculations and stuff, where it's going to be. You know, he's a pretty sharp guy, and, through his talents and stuff, we were able to recover the first rocket that we went back. And we recovered the booster, it was about 6 months later on, to a number of calculations. He ran, figured out exactly where that thing dropped in. And at one point, we actually walked within a mile of that thing, and but we did find it 6 months later. But the payload section of that, of our first shot, we found the second day, because right after we launched, I mean, we were so lucky on that deal, because right after we launched, a sandstorm came in and wiped it out, out there, and we couldn't go look for the rocket the payload section. But the next day we went out and went up into the mountains, and they found it right away. So we're pretty lucky.
Lonnie is in Denver, Colorado, and Lonnie says CubeSats are all the rage today. Do you think you might want to have a launcher that puts CubeSats into space?
Well, as a matter of fact, I have been talking to some people about that. But that and the other project is still on the shelf a little bit until we get this Canyon deal jumped, done, and the movie, because I really want to concentrate on my movie and use that as a tool, which I mentioned before. But down the road, you know, that's just one more thing. But see, again, you know, there's a talk. You know, you can talk and talk and talk and talk. What we need right now is we need less talkers and more doers. And the CubeSat thing, you know, it's very feasible, you know, for sure. And but we just need to stop. They need to stop talking. They need to start doing. That's all I can say.
There are six companies vying to do small sat launchers. And
I realize that.
Yeah, I just talked about it at a lecture I gave in.
But I was talking more of an amateur.
Amateur nothing. Yeah, it's
that's what I mean.
No, the companies are all raising money and trying to be professional and all that. Here is another one from you. This is from Beth, and Beth is in Kansas City, and Beth says, "I'm wondering if you give any thought to why it seems so hard for the suborbital companies to get their act together and to have their first commercial flight this many years after the XPRIZE has been won, and also given the fact that suborbital flight has been around since a long, long time, and they still can't seem to pull it off."
Well, you know, that's kind of interesting because, you know, one of the things in our licensing and stuff like that, it was the flyover, no people, okay?
Uh-huh.
And so I've always wondered with the, you know, the original Burt Rutan project and all that about flying. And I was out there, I don't know if you were there in their first flights they were doing, and they went off the course a little bit, and they made a big deal out of that. And I know that the FAA is really concerned about flying over people,
right.
Populated areas. And I haven't, you know, at this point, they've licensed nobody to do that. And I don't even know what's going on with their project. But at this point, nobody else has done it. Nobody else has fallen over people. But I think that's going to be a major problem.
They're this many, I think they're beyond 10 years past XPRIZE, but they're not ready yet for whatever reason. I think Jeff Bezos with Blue Origin is probably the furthest along, especially with his reusability that he's been successful about. But X-Corps and Virgin, we always joke and say we're 2 years away, right? Well, we may still be 2 years away, and in 2 years we may still be 2 years away. So I don't know. I guess it's harder than people think.
Well, it'd be nice if the government would help out in that area more instead of giving away money to everybody that don't work for the money, you know, that don't really need it.
Well, maybe if they put some cell phones in the cargo hold, they could get some government money. What do you think? I shouldn't say
you got
that.
Right there.
I'll catch hell for that comment. I think it probably is harder, especially since they want to fly these vehicles multiple times a day. At least that's their intention, and so they need rapid turnaround with very low maintenance, and of course they do want to put crews and people on board. So I think it's probably a lot harder than they thought when they originally went into it, and I just hope that they can pull it off. I'd love to see all three of these companies survive and prosper, but I'd be happy if at least one of them did.
Oh yeah, so we took the tour down there at SpaceX. I mean, it's an incredible operation down there. I was impressed. I'll have to tell you that.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different level altogether.
Yeah, for sure.
Going to SpaceX.
You know, I don't know if I ever. Have you ever heard the book, the Collier's Book of Wonders?
Yeah.
When I was a young boy, my favorite book was the Collier's Book of Wonders, and in there is a picture of a guy that's sitting on top of a rocket that was made out of wood. And he was sitting in and he had a leather helmet on. And then the next picture, first off, all they would do is have black powder back then.
Uh-huh.
And then the next picture said it was smoldering on the ground and he lived to tell about it. And that's, I have to tell you, that's probably the first thing that inspired me about going into space. And I remember as a kid, I went and put ironing boards on my bicycle and went over to over to Key Wade in the hill and pedaled down that hill like heck, trying to think I was going to fly because it went nowhere. But I think that's the first place that really inspired me, about space. And then my father, he built telescopes, and he hand ground all the lenses and all that. I mean, so I was around that all the time, and my bedroom had stars. You know, the stars would actually glow. Who knows?
Yeah, I had that on.
Nuclear for all I know, but they would glow at night in our room, you know.
I had that on my ceiling,
so
too, yeah.
As I look back in my early years, but unfortunately, when my father passed away, he had put that book of Colley's Book of Wonders in a box. And it said, my wishes, and he addressed it to Warner Von Braun. And I want you to send this to him. Well, I feel kind of bad about it. I did not do that. I did not fulfill my dad's wishes. But, you know, he's passed away now, and I still got that book.
And Von Braun has passed away, too. No telling where that book would have ended up if
exactly.
He had sent it on.
And that's how I kind of feel kind of good. I kind of feel kind of bad because I didn't keep my dad's wishes, but I wouldn't have had that book, and it means an awful lot. I'll send you that page. I'll email you that page. You'll get a kick out of it.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to see it. I'm sure your dad is okay with the decision you made. That's
probably
for sure. Well, I'm sure. Listeners, there is still time if you want to get a question in or a call in. So our toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. And then email, if you would like to email us another note, is drspace, drspace, at thespaceshow.com. Are you impressed by or happy with this push to commercial space and sort of getting away from NASA and the government doing everything?
Oh, for sure. Oh, yes. Yes, for sure. You know, we can do it cheaper, better, and faster. That's the bottom line, so take it away from them.
So, you know? So you're okay with all of that?
Oh yeah. Well, usually the government's involved; they mess it up one way or another. You know, I hate to say that it shouldn't be that way at all, but that's the way it is.
Harriet is in Phoenix, Arizona, and she says, "Do you know about amateur rocket opportunities in other countries? For example, if you're in Russia, do kids have amateur rocket opportunities, or in any of the ESA or European countries or elsewhere?"
Oh, yes, in the European countries. There's there's a Tripoli prefix over there. In England and Sweden, Norway, I mean, they're all over there. Australia, they're all over. If you look up Tripoli, you'll see there's prefix all over the United States. There's a lot of where they're able to import rocket motors that were built here.
Well, I know Australia and New Zealand have big rocket clubs. I have a magazine called, I think it's just called Rocket, which is an amateur rocket magazine.
Yeah, they got a real nice article on me in this month, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, and they've got there's rocket clubs and stuff all over the world. Now, I don't know if they're in Russia or China.
No, I don't know either. I've done a Russian show, though, as a matter of fact, about my rockets. I know they came over and shot a show here. But, you know, I make parachutes for these guys, so for these rockets recovery. I own a company that, Rocket Man Enterprise. We make parachutes for amateur rockets, so I get to talk to a lot of these guys from all over the world. They call me all over. Not from Russia necessarily, but from all over, so I do know for a fact that they do launch rockets and other
and they have contests and listeners, you ought to get a copy of Rocket Magazine, and I mean, it's really, when I got it, it was a real eye opener as to what goes on in this world.
Yeah, it's online now, so you can just go online
okay.
and get it.
Okay, although the pictures are really cool in the magazine. So,
for sure,
you know that it's very high quality magazine. When you go to talk to kids, or do they want to come and do this kind of thing, or do they just sort of hold you in awe? But it's not for me.
No, I've inspired I've inspired a lot of kids, as a matter of fact, to come back in my life, and I say, I remember when you told me, Guy, we were just out on the East Coast, as a matter of fact, at dyslexia school, and I'll tell you what. These kids, they know how to work with their hands. They may not know anything about math or some of the reading and writing, but when it comes to building things, you know, they're pretty smart. And that's what it's all about. It's you know, in one way, dyslexia is a gift in one way, if you're able to take advantage of that gift, because you're normally pretty smart in another area, and especially working with your hands. You know, that's my gift. I'm able to do just about anything. I'm not afraid to do anything, you know.
What was your most challenging thing that you did? Was it the motorcycle jumps, or was it the rocket going to space? What do you think was the most challenging?
Yeah, that was challenging because of many things. You know, I mean, I was put down by it just seemed like I was fighting with everybody at the time. Yeah, truly, and I mean, even within my family, because I wouldn't quit. You know, and I was spending all this money, and that was tough. It was really tough, and I'll tell you, the happiest day of my life, I can tell you this, is when Jerry Larson handed me the payload section out of our space shot. I want to tell you, standing right there with Jerry and the team, I was this the happiest day in my life, bar none. That was it, and it was quite a feeling. It'd be great if a lot of other people out there that know how to dream is to go beyond that dream and go after your dream and just never give up. Just never give up until you reach that dream. And I would tell you, that dream will come true. And it's not just happened in rocketry with me. It's happened in many other things in my life. You just never give up until you achieve it, no matter what.
And I guess not be focused on money is the ultimate payback for your work.
No. You see, I've never had respect for money. You know, to me, money is nothing but a tool in the toolbox. It's like a crescent wrench or a hammer to me. You know, it's money is to use to do things with, good things with. And, you know, that's why I got to work the rest of my life.
Yeah, but...
but I ain't done doing yet, see? That's
yeah,
no
but
deal.
Work for you is like play. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I'm an easy guy to work with, by the way.
listeners, we should have told you about this earlier. His website is www.the-rocketman.com. And you can see his parachutes there. And you can see his rockets and all sorts of good stuff there. What is that bicycle that I'm looking at on the orange bicycle that I'm looking at on your homepage?
See, orange one. I was trying to think what that. Yeah, that's a hybrid with a hybrid rocket motor. And then we build another bicycle that's in there someplace that runs on air. That's called Gizmo. It's got a couple of air motors on it, and it's compressed air. But I try to build nothing but weird stuff. You know, I just finished up a nitro powered pencil sharpener just because I didn't have one.
A nitro-powered pencil sharpener.
Yeah. I'll post it here pretty soon.
Now, you also did a rocket belt, too, right?
Yeah, I built a couple of rocket belts, and I helped the original guys with the GoFast rocket belt. I helped them a little bit with getting some things and some knowledge and getting the parts and things like that. And that rocket belt's still out there flying. They're very active with their belt, and I have one here at my place also.
So Carl is in Seattle, and he says, what are some of the better-known movies you were a stuntman in? I'm a movie buff, and I'm 75 years old. I bet I saw a lot of your movies and didn't know you were the stuntman.
Well, I've worked in a lot of films through the years, and also stunt coordinating and stuff, but some of the biggest names that I worked in, like Stick and Sharks the Machine and... Oh man! Big Drop Dead Fred. You know, a lot of those, and we did like 17 segments of That's Incredible. That show, we did a lot of those shows. But I was involved, and I did America's Most Wanted, Unsolved Mysteries, Rescue 911, shows like that. I worked in a ton of those shows through the years, you know, and I built a good share of the equipment that they use in the film business, and they still do. And that stuff was invented and built right here up in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
In
my shop, I built a lot of that equipment.
Any of the big action movies that, like, starred Schwarzenegger or anything like
that?
Well,
you know, like Lethal Weapon and Live and Die in L.A. and stuff like that. We built all the equipment in there. And then I worked with Don Robinson in that film there. I mean, there was a number of films that I worked with Dar in, yes.
Any James Bond films?
No. I know a lot of the guys that did work in those films, stuff like that, yeah.
Is that
my old guys, you know, they're passing on now. They're getting old, and they got a new group of people out there.
How do you become a stuntman? If anyone's listening and they wanted to do this, what's the path to becoming a stuntman?
Well, the path is, it's kind of a tough business to get into that. And, you know, I didn't realize how many people are in the business. When I was in it, maybe there was 100, but now there's only so much... there's only so much room, but the best way, go to L.A., make friends. And if you can make friends with a stunt guy, he likes you, you know, do whatever he asks, you know, polish his car, tires, whatever you do, you know, just hang out with him, be a good guy, work hard, right attitude, and before you know it, you'll end up on the set. That's kind of the way that it works. It's one thing, you go to school and all that, I don't care what it's an engineer or whatever, It's who you know, you know, and the film business is exactly the same way, to get a job. And I was lucky to have Dar as my friend and Kitty O'Neill. And eventually, I became her legal guardian actually over a period of time. But, you know, hang around with the right people. That's all I can say.
And is there a school you get trained in?
Yeah, there is a couple of schools that are out there. Yes. And you might look on the internet and get into that. I know I'm sending my son up to Canada this year to work with some of the stunt guys and learn the ins and outs of that, you know, just because I have the connection to do that.
We're coming up close to the end of our 90-minute program. What should we have talked about that I've forgotten or omitted or we haven't talked about or that you want to make sure we know about?
Well, I have no secrets, and you know, if you want to email, if you got a question, especially if you're dyslexic or you just want to chat about anything, more than likely I'll give you my phone number, because it's really hard for me to sit there and type a lot. It takes me a long time because I have to go back and spell check, and sometimes spell check don't know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
But you know, if you email me first and I start talking to you a little bit, and I see that you're truly interested in what we're doing, I will give you my number, and then you can contact me, and then we can chat on the phone a little bit. But I'm willing to help anybody out there, and I don't have no secrets in the space deal or anything we built. I'm more than glad to help anybody out. Just because I love to see people succeed, it's all a part of my thing, you know.
Absolutely, and I know you have reached out to a lot of different people because I hear from them from time to time. So you're a very giving guy, and you're a great asset to the space industry and the rocket industry, that's for sure.
Well, thank you. See, you know, I'm just really a blessed guy, and there's no way of paying back other than to help others. And so that's what it's about. And I'll tell you, you know, like I say, when this film is done, that's my main course in my life is to help dyslexic people, not just kids, but just dyslexic people in general.
Well, we need to stay in closer touch. Certainly when the film is done, I want to bring you back on the show and we can talk about it.
Oh, that'd be great.
And help you, you know, let people know that it's out there, and especially if it's going to be on cable or some way for a lot of people to see it or buy the DVD or however it's going to be marketed.
I think it's going to be really inspiring to people who are interested in the space also, because there's a lot behind it, and it's going to explain a lot about, you know, what we went through, what it actually takes to do it. And, you know, we've seen October Sky, you know, I built the motor, the rockets for that movie. And I think that this is going to be kind of on that line of an October Sky, only it's just going to have a lot of twists in it.
Are you telling any of your stories in it?
Yeah. I'm sure that I got nothing to do with the script of it. By the way, it's out of my hands, but they know me quite well.
Well, are you? Do you have a cameo appearance? Are you actually in the movie?
Yeah. Oh, I'm in it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I can understand you probably wouldn't have done the script for it, but
no, not at all. No, other people are working on that. Yes, but it's going to be fun. Yeah, I wish I could tell you the people that are in it, but you'll see when that.
Okay, well, we will stay in touch, and I'll look forward to talking to you again when you're ready to release it and get the word out, and I'm looking forward to seeing the film too. It'll be really inspiring. I'm sure of it. Absolutely sure of it.
Well, I just want to thank you, David, and you just keep up the good work, and because we need more of this out there, and really appreciate it.
It's only good because people like you come on the space show and are willing to talk openly and frankly, whether you're a scientist or a policy guy or you know, an advocate who has a passion and wants to go live on Mars or whatever. It only works because people out there are willing to give and instruct and share with other people. And if people weren't willing to do that, there wouldn't be this program. And so you're the ones who make it a success. And
well,
thank you for that. So it works, you know, everybody plays a role, right?
Yes. It takes a team, that's for sure.
That's right.
It really takes a team.
Kai, we will stay in touch. I look forward to talking to you again. And when I get this program archived, probably early in the morning, I'll send you all the information for it. And we'll talk again a lot sooner than last time, okay?
Okay, great. That's a deal. Thank you so much again.
Thank you. And okay, listeners, Eileen Collins of Space Show fame and Colonel in the Air Force is our guest on Friday morning. So you do not want to miss listening to Colonel Collins. It is going to be a great show. You know, I asked her, Kai, for a picture for my website because my new website can take pictures. She started bombarding me with pictures of her having fun on the space shuttle and on the ISS. I didn't know what to put up there because I can only put one picture up there. But she's was having a total ball on the shuttle and the space station. She kept sending me these different pictures of her doing acrobatics and other stuff on the station and the shuttle. And I, you know, what a fun person, what a fun experience. You know, what can one say? And she had to be a lot of fun just to keep sending me all those pictures. I really appreciated that. So, listeners, you're in for a great time with Colonel Collins, I guess retired Colonel Collins. So you don't want to miss that show on Friday. And everybody, thanks to Kai Michelson and all of you for participating. And have a great week and keep looking up. Good night from the Space Show.